another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium and Gale Network. And welcome back, co-host Sam Graveline, back in the saddle. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, boys. It's truly the list of guests you guys have had this summer to then add on to that. I'm honored. I'm humbled. It's a great experience to be back with the Breakfast Boys. But yeah, good to see you guys. Good to chat some ball with you. Granted, you guys have become the superstars of Gator Nation podcasting. Glenn and Tommy Howe, a couple other big interviews, and time difference. You know, I was just in the middle of the office while you guys were doing all that. But glad, really awesome to see you guys crushed it, and glad to be back with the boys talking about Gator ball as we're getting dangerously close.
It's a special episode whenever we can get a Key West high school football season record holder for what's the record you got again? Let's flex it for the people real quick.
It's most single season extra points.
That's right.
You're right, DC. It is rare to get a Key West conk record holder on here. There's not very many of them. So, you know, I'm one of the few. So happy to play my part.
Yeah, like Sam was referencing, if you haven't listened before, we had Tommy Houck, JC Deke, the men's golf coach, and Jonathan Sapphire, assistant men's basketball coach, on our show this summer. You can find our videos on YouTube at our channel at Breakfast with the Gators, or on Spotify and Apple. If you just type in Breakfast with the Gators, should be the last three most recent episodes. So go check those out if you haven't. And we are brought to you by our partner, Norse & Norse PA. Norse & Norse PA is out of Lake City, Florida, and they are a permanent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give God a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. It was a pretty big week last week. I know there's a clip going around from Coach Summerall talking about it's no longer podcast season. He's been on about a million this offseason. It is now football season. That kind of train starts rolling now that all 16 representatives of the conference have left Tampa. Dev, did you catch any of the media scramble down there in Southwest Florida?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a good sign when you have rival fans that are all up in arms over jokes at press conferences and a coach that's willing to play ball a little bit with the media. So I thought that he represented himself well. The talking season has gone really well, I think, for Coach Summerall. I think that it was going to take a lot for him to win the fan base over this offseason. And as much as he could before the season started, before year one started, he's done that. Everything he said has been spot on. The recruiting has been excellent this first summer with him on the job. And I think that everybody's just excited to see if the most important part, the on-the-field product, matches what we've heard from him behind a podium and what we've seen from him in recruiting so far.
Yeah, and to your point, obviously, hopefully he stays behind the podium and doesn't, you know, launch that sucker at a reporter. That definitely riled some people up. But it's to your point, Devin, he's saying all the right things. And I feel like from the previous regime, the guy leading the charge there, it was just always so ho-hum. Didn't really want to say anything that would shoot himself in the foot until maybe later on when he was already probably laid his bed. He's kind of started to talk a little crazy, but yeah, he's refreshing. I mean, he keeps it real. He's got energy, man. I'm excited to see him on the sidelines, but yeah, to your point, it's been a very good off season, and you know, for not seeing him take the field yet, I'm definitely really excited to see what he can do just by the way he speaks behind the podium and remains behind the podium, hopefully. And yeah, he's fired up. He's ready to go.
Last offseason we were hearing spot the ball from a coach 3 years in that hadn't earned that, you know, benefit of the doubt yet, even after 3 years. And then this year we get our head coach sitting, you know, talking to media scrum saying, yeah, if we didn't get better this offseason, if we don't keep getting better, we're going to get our ass kicked this fall. So a little scary to hear that, but it's also more real than what we were hearing, the false bravado, the spot the ball last offseason. So that's a breath of fresh air, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think the breath of fresh air is just the fact that opposing teams hate our coach again. You know, they're hopeful that Napier would stay in Gainesville as long as possible just due to his track record and how many times we got beat. It's kind of like us with Mike Norvell in Tallahassee, but how they just kind of put every single quote of Summerall's under a microscope throughout last Thursday in his 4 hours in Tampa. It's pretty refreshing. Auburn fans specifically and Georgia fans also jumped into that mix. And then going back to what you're talking about, Dev, we're going to get our rear ends kicked if we don't turn this thing around in fall camp. His transparency with the roster, specifically the offensive line and the strength and conditioning program that he inherited, what were your takeaways from his talking points there?
It's scary. I think that when you hear your offensive line isn't strong enough, I think that that's the last thing you want, the last complaint. It should be the most important part of a program is the off-season strength and conditioning program. And obviously the last staff, it was a work in progress the whole time that he was here. He hired one guy that left for Boston College after 2 months on the job because he was friends with Bill O'Brien. And then obviously when Summerall gets here and as he put it, takes a look under the hood, sees what the offensive linemen are lifting, and it's not up to the standard. It's a scary thing to be bad at as a coach, I imagine. So the way that he spoke at Media Days gave me a little bit of confidence that improved, which should have been the bare minimum over the offseason. So I do appreciate – and I don't think that he strikes me as the guy that would say that it improved if it didn't improve. So for him to say that he's happier with where they're at now than they were at the beginning of the offseason and in the spring – I think that that's a good telltale sign. I don't know how good this offensive line will be this fall. Just in year one, it's hard to overhaul an entire room. But I do trust what he said, and I think he's kind of built a little bit of benefit of the doubt just in terms of if he doesn't think it's good enough, he's been willing to say it's not good enough. So between Phil Troutwine and between the signs of life that he spoke about at Media Day, I'm feeling better about the offensive line now than I was back in March and April.
Yeah, it's nothing that we're not used to, right? I think, you know, offensive line play for the past decade has been pretty poor. And I think it was last year, it was supposed to be the year that it was finally right. And we obviously saw how that worked out. So nothing that we're not used to your kind of points, Devin. It's hard to completely overhaul that room in one off season. But I feel like he's kind of put the right pieces in place to do so. I think we can all agree it's the best position coach we've had on the offensive line in a very long time. And you just kind of let that settle, let that marinate. And hopefully with the offensive coordinator that we have now, I think he's a little better than what we were working with in the past. Can, you know, obviously scheme, game plan, call plays around that. So it's not super concerning, but like I just said, like we go into this every summer, every offseason, every fall camp, you know, how's the offensive line going to look? So hopefully it's just serviceable and gets the job done and makes some holes for number 13 in the backfield, because that's kind of it's all we need, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Go ahead, Jack.
The strongest storyline is obviously him talking about what he inherited, but it's the new leadership that he continues to point out. I think there's been multiple occasions this offseason, specifically Thursday again, where he's crediting Harrison Moore, the Georgia Tech transfer that plays center, and TJ Shanahan, the guard from Penn State that he's talked about, that has really kind of overhauled this room and sticking out from a leadership perspective, that it's taken new blood. You know, not somebody in that room, which they might have, but we just haven't heard it yet from Summerall, of kind of taking ownership of that room. It's two new guys coming in.
Well, and look where they came from too. They came from Georgia Tech with Buster Faulkner. So Harrison Moore has experience and an understanding of what Buster Faulkner's asking of his guys. And then you have TJ Shanahan that came from Penn State, another guy, Big Ten school, guy that's coming in knowing the expectations of the offensive line coach. I think it speaks a lot to those guys that the offensive coordinator and the offensive line coach that came to Florida brought those guys with them. A couple guys that it's probably going to take time for them to come together, but it's guys that the coaches know what they're capable of. They know their work ethic. They know their talent level. They know their strength. So I feel pretty comfortable and confident in those guys just from the fact that the position coaches brought them in to be a part of the room at Florida.
Yeah, the familiarity is there. And, you know, I think when obviously we'll get to the quarterback, but bringing in Philo, everyone kind of was like, all right, that's the guy. He obviously knows Buster Faulkner, the scheme. I would say it's probably even more important for the center, the way he's obviously reading coverages and everything. So I think that's huge. And then, you know, Shanahan, a guard, the familiarity with Troutwine. So interior should be pretty strong just based on those two guys. They know what we want to do. The question I would say, obviously, can the tackles hold up against, you know, SEC edge rushers and, you know, keep the pocket clean? But I have no – the interior are very confident, especially having Harrison Moore at center, knowing everything that Buster Faulkner wants to do, reading coverages, reading schemes, knowing how to check when and out of plays, and just being a secondary quarterback who's snapping the ball. I think it's massive for the offense and the projection that they hope to go on.
And there's been, you know, the reports about guys like Bryce Lovett having really good off seasons at tackle. Lovett's a guy that's been here for 4 years now. He's a redshirt junior. He got a little bit of experience last year. So one of the guys that are familiar face to Florida fans that you saw, you know, you've seen over the last few years that hopefully continues to develop and is a guy that had the raw tools when Troutwine and Faulkner came over.
Yeah, DC, I know there was another interesting conversation. I believe it was on the SEC Now or part of the SEC Nation set up. Nick Saban had a little conversation with Coach Summerall. I believe he was talking about how he's now a Florida resident. Him and Governor DeSantis are good friends. And quite frankly, he told Summerall, if you don't get your shit together, I'm going to be in the middle of that, because he is a part-time Gator, or, you know, semi-Gator fan, and did a little miniature Gator chomp. Not only does Summerall have have Spurrier and Urban Meyer to rely on, but now it seems like he's got Nick Saban in his back pocket to kind of pick his brain a little bit about the coaching at this level, especially at a university like Florida.
Yeah, it was cool to hear. I mean, I think that obviously the more resources that your coach has, the better. Saban's been known to, you know, speak highly of Florida coaches in the past. This is obviously the first one that, I guess other than Mullen, that wasn't a Saban disciple since Urban's been here. So for him to speak highly of him, I think it speaks volumes. And, you know, it's one of those things that we're getting to the end of talking season. So the Saban being excited and liking Summerall, all that stuff goes out the window in a month. And that's what I'm excited about. Like, it's cool that he stayed for his press conference and took notes on what he was saying, all that stuff's awesome. I'm ready to see, you know, on the field how it translates from Troy and Tulane to the game field on game days. Obviously, all we have to work on is talking season and media day right now. But I've had enough of Saban butting in on 2026 SEC football. Like, let's move on, and I'll trust Spurrier and Urban's advice on what it means to be the coach at Florida.
It's like in a movie, like your childhood villain is kind of like starting to make some great points and join the good side. You just kind of feel a little weird about it.
Yeah. Semi-Gator's a weird way to try to say that you're a Gator fan. No real Gator, whatever phrase it like that.
I wonder if we'll see him in the Swamp this year. We just hired his former president at Alabama.
Well, if we're good enough, hopefully we'll have game day in town and he'll stick around for that.
We do. Who's our – trying to Ole think Miss who would our home game be? Ole Miss or Oklahoma?
Yeah.
But Ole Miss would have LSU Ole Miss the week before in Oxford, so that'd be a – I don't know if they'd double up on the same team, but we could have – they might.
They're coming for the Campbell game.
Another, if we go and we beat Georgia, then Oklahoma the next week in the Swamp, I think, would be the one you'd circle.
Would be about the only one. I agree. Most important game for Summerall. He touched on this a little bit. I believe a reporter asked him, talking about the rivalries. Obviously, that's a point of emphasis for any UF coaches coming here and beat your Tennessees, your LSUs, your Georgias, and Florida States, and then Miami when you play them every, you know, few years. We don't have Tennessee on the schedule this year. We've got Texas for the third straight year, who's kind of turned into a little bit of a rival in the new conference scheduling they're laying out for us. Auburn, a team that we used to play every single year until, I believe, the late 90s or early 2000s. Which one of those, Sam, out of Auburn, Texas, Georgia, Florida State, do you think is the most important for him?
Oh, boy. Our buddy's muted.
I'm back. Sorry. New to this stuff, guys. My apologies, listeners. Obviously, tough to gauge super early. You would say, obviously, you want to beat the rivals, Georgia, FSU, anytime you play them. But just given everything, especially, you know, with some of the tweets this past week, and Auburn wanted to, you know, they apparently dodged a bullet is what Auburn fans are saying. So I wouldn't necessarily at this current moment, I would say that's a very important game, just because it's the first real test, first SEC game on the road. A guy who, you know, they were looking at hiring, they went with Golish, you know, more than likely Summerall said no to them. That's the way I like to look at it. But I think that to me is a big measuring stone kind of right out the gates week three to see if we can travel. Obviously a big road win, you know, we haven't really got many of those under the Billy Napier era. So I'm looking at Auburn, especially just given all the noise around it as well. I think Auburn would be a really to start 3-0. I think that would be huge.
Did we beat a team over 500 on the road under Billy Napier?
I don't even want to look.
I think we were 10-17 away from the swamp under Billy Napier.
So yeah, to that point, obviously, like you don't like to compare to the previous coaches, but it's incredibly hard not to. That's kind of what we do as fans. So I think that game, week three, first road test, like Jackson was saying, someone we used to play as a rival way back in the day. It's obviously fizzled lately, but usually when we get with Auburn, it's usually a pretty good game. So I'm looking at that one, especially just because, like I said, given all the things they've been saying all week that they dodged a bullet, this guy's corny, this and that. So I'm kind of fired up for that game now that I'm talking about. I'm not going to lie.
There's some Jordan Hare demons to exercise when we go to Auburn too. It's hard not to say Auburn just because it's early in the season, but for the sake of the podcast, I'll pivot away. I don't think it's Georgia, obviously, don't think it's Texas. Obviously, Georgia and Florida State are always big games. It's rivalry games. Those are the two games that are non-negotiable. You got to win them every year. But to me, protecting the swamp is step one in getting the program back to where we need it to be. And the two big home games that we have, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, are two teams that I think are beatable. I think Ole Miss is going to take a step back without Lane Kiffin this year. I know that they've got Trinidad Chambliss back. I know that they got Kewon Lacy back. But Florida had a roster last year that competed with Ole Miss, with Lane Kiffin, a better coach than what they have now, in my opinion, in Oxford last year. And obviously 2 years ago already beat them in the swamp. Different quarterback, but same program. And I think that week three you get Auburn. Week four, coming back home, no matter how that game goes before you, it's going to be the first big home game of the Summerall era. I think that's the game that, it's a big-time opponent. It's going to be a team that's ranked, no matter what happens in the Ole Miss-LSU game, top 10, top 15, top 20 in the country coming into the swamp, team that made it to the semifinals last year. I think that's the game that you circle and say that's the swamp game. That's the game that is the most important to show the fan base proof of product. And beyond that, the Oklahoma game, I think another opportunity at home to show the fans that this isn't like the last guy, and to cement yourself and to show the fan base that we're moving this thing in the right direction.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you, Dev, because the four games I mentioned, none of them were in the state of Florida. So right. those are your two prominent ones. You want to win at home, because we only got six home games, I believe, this year. It's a really horrendous home slate. Two cupcakes to start the season, and four league games at home.
And the other two are Vandy and South Carolina, right?
Correct. And South Carolina is on the chopping block with Shane Beamer and Vanderbilt, obviously, no more Diego Pavia. And that is late in the season, so who knows if that five-star freshman quarterback will be starting at that point. What's his name? Jared Curtis?
Yeah. The Georgia flip.
Yep. So a lot of uncertainty there, obviously, when we get into late November. But I agree, Dev. That first big, potentially night game, it's either 3:30 or the 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock slate in the swamp. And that's really where he can get this program rolling in the right direction. Because Auburn, I'm not buying Golish and the Tigers and Byron Brown as a team, but Jordan Hare is just a ridiculously hard place to play. I don't care who is coaching or who's playing in there. Even the Nick Saban team struggled, as mighty as they were with Auburn being down. Georgia's looked pretty bad in Jordan Hare in recent years. So just a weird venue, night game. I was there in 2006 when we lost. Obviously, you'd like to start 3-0 and 1-0 in league play, but that Ole Miss night game.
And just speaking to how important the Auburn game is, if you do get out of that game with a win, obviously that's a peer year one. That's their big home game. They're get the season off on the right foot against a down Florida program. If we're able to ruin that for them and then turn around and you get, you know, a team that made it to the Final Four last year in the Swamp at 3-0, 1-0 in the conference, the environment's going to be off the chain. It's going to probably be the night game at that point. And that makes, you know, the opportunity to get to 4-0 and for it to be in the Swamp against a good opponent like that, that's going to be a big time environment.
Yeah, especially with the, obviously you're not looking ahead in the moment, but then you go to Columbia, Missouri, a place we've also struggled at in recent years. So I know Auburn
is a sneaky important one too.
What'd you say, Sam?
That's a sneaky important one in my opinion as well, just because like you said, we got demons there. Obviously, like, you know, to your guys, you guys are saying, you know, you got to protect the Swamp 100%, you know, losing there is inexcusable. But to your point, Jackson, they're only having 6 home games. That's kind of why, to me, Auburn, the first road test, who are we when we get off the bus in an away stadium? Because like we've already mentioned, used to be really bad. We used to just not show up, truth be told. So to me, I just think setting the tone, getting a conference win early in a tough environment, I think that can go a long way for – obviously going to Texas is not going to be an easy game. Not saying you're going to create a bunch of momentum to win that game, but – gives you some more confidence when you do have to go to Como, gives you some more confidence down the road. You know, we're at Kentucky again. You know, we've had some used to never have demons there, but you know, Billy Napier kind of came in and we saw last year.
And that even started with Mullen.
Yeah. Mullen kind of started that trend. Yeah. So I just think if you can go out of the gate, first big game, get a big road win, I think that can really set the stage for the future road visits. And we can finally kind of see, put up a good product away from the Swamp, because we haven't in a while.
Well, they got us predicted. We'll jump into the All-SEC teams and the media preseason football poll. Georgia, 88 first place bowl votes there. The projected number one team, with Texas falling at 2. Then the Gators are at 9. Lumped in there with Missouri, South Carolina, and Auburn, rounding out 10 through 12. And Vanderbilt 13, so you know, half our opponents are bunched up right there in the front, in the middle half of the conference, ladder back end of the conference, while we got Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss 1, 2, 3, and Oklahoma 7, who's still got a Heisman contender. It's going to be a top 15 AP preseason team. I believe, what was it, Dev? Ball was the second team running back and third team all-purpose. VB3, third team specialist returner. And Jaden Woods, 13 defensive line. Are you surprised by the votes on Thursday in Tampa or Friday in Tampa?
I'm a little surprised by Jaden Woods. I feel like Jaden Woods is still kind of a Florida secret at this point. Obviously, there were teams that were after him trying to get him into the portal last year. But that's a guy that he wasn't a prolific sacker last year. I think he only had 2.5 sacks his freshman year. A guy that we're projecting is going to have a special jump in a big-time season this year. So I was a little surprised with him being on the third-team defensive line, especially if it meant that there was no Miles Graham, who I think has proven it more so far at this level. Not to say that Jaden Woods hasn't, but it seems like a bigger projection to say Jaden Woods is going to be an all-conference defensive lineman than it would have been to say that Miles Graham is going to be an all-conference linebacker. So that was the biggest one to me. I thought it was too early for Dallas Wilson and Eric Singleton coming from Auburn, having a little bit more of a down year last year. That one didn't surprise me as much either. But Miles Graham, I thought, was the biggest snub, if you want to call it a snub. And Jaden Woods being on the list just surprised me a little bit going into this season.
Yeah, no Miles Graham's kind of questionable, especially – I mean, obviously the SEC's always been known for linebacker play, and maybe I'm ignorant to say that there's, you know – that many better linebackers in the conference than Miles Graham, but I personally don't really see it, just because obviously that guy was really the only thing we had last year defensively that was super consistent, always on the field. So totally agree with that snubbing. And yeah, to your point, I don't think you can put Dallas Wilson on there if it was based on ability, projection, sure, but he's got to obviously stay on the field. And I have big hopes for Eric Singleton Jr. I think that dude should be playing on Sundays. And I think
please don't give him the curse that you gave us last year.
Yeah, no, I had a good one on a Sturdivant. That was this one's different though. Like this guy could have been drafted 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think he's different in my opinion. Like route running wise, and I think just what he adds to that room as a collection of just what the different pieces can be. But yeah, obviously you just don't know really what you're getting from him after Auburn. But his familiarity with the system and how Buster Faulkner used him when he was at Georgia Tech, super exciting. Especially, I think, having VB3 just as a specialist returner, I could see him obviously getting a spot as a receiver there too, because obviously we have big hopes for him.
Yeah, I think any one of our three wide receivers in that Singleton, Dallas Wilson, and VB3 can make the first, second, or third team All-SEC honors at the end of the year. Obviously, still need a quarterback who's going to throw the football, which we'll dive in here in a little bit on that conversation. But yeah, Dev, I think the biggest snub was just Miles Graham. He's the most proven. I think he's our best defensive player. And again, a little shocked with Jaden Woods, but hey, we'll take
a little more respect.
Correct.
One other thing about the media projected standings this year, if you look at, you touched on it a little bit, Florida's projected ninth. I think five of our nine conference opponents were projected to finish below us in the conference. It was South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Kentucky, and
Auburn.
The four that were projected to finish ahead of us, again, two of those games are at home, Oklahoma and Ole Miss. So just looking at that, I think it's a big opportunity for Summerall in year one in games that you're probably not going to be favored in, you know, between 3 and 6 point underdogs, probably against Ole Miss and Oklahoma at home. Games that are going to be winnable because they're being played in the swamp. Those are the two that you circle. Obviously, Texas, we beat them in the swamp last year. But you go to Austin, it's going to be a tough game. Playing Georgia and Atlanta at the neutral site is going to be a tough game. But in terms of teams that you think are going to be better than you, or that the media thinks are going to be better than Florida this year, to get only four on the schedule that are projected ahead of us, and two of those games to be at home, is a good draw conference wise for us.
And like you said, one in Atlanta. I know it's in Atlanta, but still a neutral site game.
Right.
Atlanta's got the largest UF alumni base in the country, and it's just a 5-hour drive from Gainesville. So it will still be at minimum 60-40 Georgia fans, but closer to 50-50, I imagine, just with the
proximity. I think it'll look like it'll look like Florida, Georgia, and Jacksonville, I imagine, half
you
and
think
half.
So?
Yeah.
Well, it depends on how the first 6-7 games go of the season, but yeah.
That's fair.
It'll be pretty close. Anything else to hit on SEC Media Day-wise before we jump into our mailbag? We got a lot of questions from our listeners we can dive into here the latter half of the episode.
Bring it on.
Do you guys have any anything? I know camp starts, what is it, a week from Wednesday? Week from Tuesday?
Tuesday. So 9 days from us recording now, 8 days from when most of you guys are listening.
So are there any of the biggest battles or biggest things you're looking for as we enter Summerall's first fall camp?
Well, we get into a little bit of that in our mailbag, Dev. So that's why I was transitioning there. But
what a plug.
Yeah. Let's
stay healthy.
That's the biggest thing. Well, it was, I don't know if you guys remember, might have been early on, right after spring ball. I think he was on some radio shows or some network shows talking about kind of the lineups he did and rotating players. I don't think Jaden Ball ran a whole lot in the spring. Miles Graham didn't play a whole lot of linebacker in the spring, doing a lot of rotating and backup pieces. Because he knows what he's got out of those two guys. So hopefully their bodies are feeling great going into August 5th, the start of fall camp. But a lot of these other folks, Dijon Johnson, he is coming off an off-season surgery that was reported Thursday of last week. We'll see. I'd like to see how he progresses. I think Neil Blackman said on a show during media days that he is our best boundary corner statistically. Going through the metrics last year, I think he was top on our team in pass breakups and one of the top in the league. So guys that did have surgeries like Dijon, coming off of injuries in the spring, this offseason, just seeing how healthy they can get while still getting reps and live action, especially hitting, is the biggest thing to look out for in terms of health. But let's dive into the mailbag, Dev, and we'll go through those concerns you might have. All right, we got Paul from Gainesville. If you were having to decide the starting quarterback battle, what attribute are you looking at most when making your decision, and which guy would you give the nod to currently? Obviously, we've got Aaron Filer, the Georgia Tech transfer, and the sophomore Tremel Jones, maybe redshirt freshman. I don't know if he earned a redshirt last year. I know he got some minutes. Those two going at it. Sam, I'll start with you.
I'm pretty sure he redshirted to answer the question there.
He's listed freshman on the roster.
I would say just what I'm looking for, and I feel like it can get – college, you know, you don't always need the guy who's going to be a superstar in the league. So just someone who's just an absolute gamer, just a dog out there who's just going to do anything he can to move the chains, make the right decisions, stays healthy. Just a good college quarterback, like above service level, just gets the job done, makes plays, has to scramble if he needs to. Who do I think that is? I'll be honest. I couldn't tell you. I would say Philo probably starts, but what Tremel showed in the spring game, I mean, he was absolutely launching that thing around. So I your guess is as good as mine as who's getting the nod right now. You might have a little more of a better intel being out in the state, but just whoever's going to make the most plays, make the least amount of stakes, and keep the chains moving, get us into scoring position routinely and often.
Dev, do you think it's a, you know, pretty much a fan base online is split down the middle of who they want starting? For those that want Aaron Filer, don't you think if he would already won the job, this would be announced? You know, he's already comfortable with the Buster Faulkner playbook. We talked about what Harrison Moore and his expectations are in that room, being with Faulkner coming from Georgia Tech. Tremel Jones didn't get an offseason last year due to an ankle injury in high school, did not get put in the best situations when his number was called in the last few games of the Napier era. But obviously has shown enough where this battle is going into the August camp. Do you think, you know, this is closer than what people think?
Yeah, I absolutely think it's close. I think that you go through the spring and you got to think even for Philo, it was his first time really, truly battling for a starting job too. And a lot of the way that Georgia Tech offense was built at Georgia Tech was around the strengths of their quarterback that was more of a running quarterback offense, probably than what we're going to see at Florida this year. But as far as the battle goes, I think that being at the spring game, I felt like Philo had a noticeably better command of the offense in terms of keeping the chains moving down to down or drive to drive and set of downs to set of downs. So in that sense, I thought that Philo looked better. Now, when you looked at who made the more explosive plays, Tremel Jones had beautiful balls. He had a 75-yard touchdown pass to Eric Singleton, and to Micah Mays had a big game, a big spring game. And you got to think that what the staff's looking for is a guy in fall camp that's going to protect the ball, who's going to not make the big, drastic, disastrous mistakes. And in the spring game, I thought that both of the guys, you know, they both turned the ball over a couple of times. How they advanced through fall camp, how they improved over the summer, how they created chemistry with their wide receivers this offseason, I think that that's still to be determined. And I don't think that it speaks to either quarterback that the battle's still going on into fall camp, just because they're both still young guys and both still guys that are looking to win a starting job for the first time in their career.
Right. I'm personally not looking necessarily for the strongest arm in the room. I know we saw Tramiel throw some deep bombs in the spring game. But also, we've talked about with our offensive line, a lot of quick game in this to get the ball out to our receivers and let them make plays in space. So accuracy on timing throws, quick decisions, the reads and the progressions is kind of how I would handle that battle. Obviously, the last few quarterbacks we've had and Lagway, Anthony Richardson, they really haven't been great in that aspect of their game, which is halted drives, resulted in drops. So those two items along with turnover avoidance is how I'd handle this fall camp. All right, Jack from Jacksonville. Does a week one starting quarterback start every game, assuming no injuries?
I hope so. What'd you say, Sam?
I didn't say anything. I think he was throwing it to you, but I heard you say, I hope so, Devin. So I echo that sentiment, but we've seen.
I mean, if
it doesn't need to be injury, something's crazy probably going to happen, but
yeah.
When's the last time we've had the starting quarterback complete all 12 regular season games? Trask
2020.
Trask, yeah.
And before that, it was.
No, AR was healthy all of 2022.
Was he?
Yeah.
I thought we got an Aiden Warner game at one of those.
That was backing up Lagway in 2023, I believe. They all started to run together under Billy, but I think his first year. Richardson started all 12 games or 13 games kind of with the bowl game.
Let's take a quick peek.
Well, didn't we get a Max Brown game too?
It's Florida
State. He started all 12 games in 2022. You're right, Dev.
Man, what a pull right there from SG.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
Well done.
Max Brown, what a name. Like, where did he end up?
Charlotte. I don't know if he's still there, but yeah, to
he won the Heisman last year for me on NCAA 26.
All right,
he's kind of a beast.
we haven't seen him in a long time, and things always happen. So typically, it is usually injury related, barring the Will Greer situation, which still is a wound that cuts deep to some. But we haven't seen it in a while, so I'm very optimistic. Hopefully,
I mean, I hope. If he's starting every game or not starting every game and it's not due to injury, then that's a problem because it means that your quarterback's not playing good. So,
correct.
And that's
hopefully barring
to come to campus or stay on campus. So,
yeah. Right. So, hopefully, barring Kelth, whoever they end up going with does start every game.
All right. Andrew from Niceville. Out of this group, we'll include the rest of the folks that are not joining us this evening. Out of this group, who is most likely to get a podium thrown at him from Coach Summerall?
Is that even a question, Andrew?
I hate he's not here.
That was a rhetorical one, right, Andrew?
I hate he's not here to defend himself. I think we can all unanimously agree that it would be Will in this chat.
It would definitely be Will, without
question. All right. I know there was a lot of controversy over the last several years. We haven't seen anything this offseason. Maybe on August 5th, once fall camp starts, we can get confirmation. But Charlie from Jacksonville, can you confirm if we'll be using a special teams mat this year?
I sure hope not. But you know, I know you guys were mentioning some battles we're looking out for. Who's going to be the punter? And hopefully we don't see him a lot.
It's the guy from Tulane, right? He brought over the kicker and punter.
He brought the kicker for sure. Durbin, he's nasty. I've been watching film. No doubts about him. We all have our roles.
Got to get in the film room with the punter, SG.
Yeah.
Like I said, hopefully I never know what his name is.
I was about to say, hopefully we don't utilize him very often. All right, Mrs. Jaws from Fernandina Beach. Thoughts on Summerall's pedicure every 2 weeks? SG.
Love it. Self-care is the best care. As a hardworking man, you're on your feet a lot. Sometimes you need someone to go down there, clean them up, scrub some scrub some rust off, and then you're good as new.
Sure,
it's refreshing. I tell you what, those things ruined me. So power to Summerall.
As long as he sticks to the pedis and it doesn't come all the way up to the manicures, then I think we're in okay shape.
I think it's fair game at that point.
Can you guys just like quickly imagine just the thought of him just in a nail salon right now?
With the old Mrs. Summerall.
It's a great image to think of.
All right, Graham from Jacksonville. Summerall has objectively crushed it every time he has been in front of the podium. You can't help but not get excited. How are y'all balancing excitement from everything he says and has done so far while also remaining cautious, knowing how this kind of thing has burned us in the past? I know that is a struggle of mine, at least until the games kick off. Where do y'all stand on that front? Good question, Graham. I think it's easy to eat up everything that he's saying and how transparent he's been. When you're for the last 5 years been below 500, it's pretty easy to realize that you got to wait until the games are kicked off and played and until we can have any really formidable opinion on him as a coach.
Yeah, and it's hard in talking season. Obviously, everything you hear, you want to be, orange and blue glasses and everything, because everything does sound great. But I think obviously this is a very different coach than what we've had, being more of a game day manager, having someone else call the offense, having someone else call the defense, and him kind of helping out in both regards. So that still, you know, remains to be seen. It's very intriguing to me just because we've gotten burned with the offensive play callers in the past and kind of neglecting defense. So that to me is super exciting. But like we mentioned, we still got to wait 6 weeks till we see it in the swamp, and then we can really kind of start to make our determinations. But to the point, I mean, he's crushed it. He exudes confidence, energy, which is basically all we were asking for from, you know, the previous guy that was in the office.
Dev, it's July. It's hot. Are you drinking the Kool-Aid?
I think I am. I a lot more than I was in December. I think that there's a in December I was threatening canceling season tickets. So I've not canceled my season tickets, and I'm going to be back in the swamp every game this fall. So I think that I'm part of being a fan is putting yourself out there and not feeling cautious about saying that your team's going to get good. So right now we don't have any evidence to say that the guy can't coach on Saturdays, because everywhere he's been, he's won. We haven't seen people. I'm sure there's been Gator fans scouring his Tulane and Troy tape for examples of less than 11 guys on special teams and taking weird safeties or not being able to figure out how to run an offense that you don't know what's coming next. So I think that he's passed everything this offseason with flying colors. I'm not cautious going into the season. I'm going into the season drinking the Kool-Aid, and I'm hoping that that we get a different result. You know, it's not Billy Napier anymore. The bad man's gone. So fresh start for everybody.
Yeah, we'll have here in a few weeks as we progress further into fall camp our season prediction show. So we won't give any spoilers or how we think. I know Dev's given his opinion so far in our group chat this week of how he thinks the Gators are fair, but we'll save that for a later date for you guys to enjoy.
Oh yeah.
Anything else to add out of you guys?
It's getting close, man. You can feel it in the air a little bit, like a little bit of excitement. I woke up this morning thinking about the 2013 Iron Bowl. So we're getting there. We're getting there.
I drove through Birmingham, Alabama Saturday and last Monday, actually stayed in Birmingham, and I had flashbacks to the 2015 Birmingham Bowl against ECU when I was there. It's like 35-degree rain. It's like sleeting. It was horrible. Disgusting game. We did win, though.
Literally, ask Adam Lane.
But we're just right around the corner, and a lot of good stuff's about to come out here in the next starting in 9 days, with some special guests on this show coming in August as well. So make sure you're subscribed, following us on YouTube, Twitter, Spotify, Apple. You certainly don't want to miss our interview coming up. And if you have not listened to our Tommy Houck, Jonathan Sapphire interview, just go check our social medias and you'll be glad you did. So thank you everybody for listening. We'll catch you again next week for another episode of Breakfast with the Gators.
Go Gators.
Gators.